These 4 weeks, of which this is week two, are always a little bit challenging for the priest or deacon, I think anyway, when it comes to opening up the gospel. The reason is that the Bread of Life series goes over those 4 weeks. So each weekend you're getting another line from John's very wordy expose on the Bread of Life through the lips of Jesus. And it becomes challenging because next week you're going to hear it again. I am the Bread of Life. And you think, oh, didn't we have that last week and the week before? So it's always a challenge for the preacher to look at it at a different angle. And some of you may remember last week I had my war on waste words to bring the W's together. And we talked a bit about how much food waste there was in the world. A third of it, I remind you, which is a horrifyingly sober figure. So this week, I wanted to just take that a little bit further, and I'm going to talk about waste a little bit again, but it's wasted time. And the Hebrew people in their journey, in their faith journey and their physical journey, we have evidence they wasted a lot of time. And it's recorded. They wasted a lot of time arguing with God, bargaining with God. And I give you that because I think some of us spend a lot of time trying to bargain with God as well. God, if you let this happen, I promise I'll promise you. It's very childish, and there's no maturity in that in terms of understanding a mature relationship with God. And I know that it's a always challenging, to be in a relationship with someone you cannot see. Much easier to fall in love with somebody whose hand you can hold, whose eyes you can gaze into. We are trying to fall in love with a God that we cannot see. And all we have is the evidence of his love for us through history, even going back to the time of Moses. And that requires, in the journey of our life, it requires us to be sustained. We haven't got time to waste. I can't believe it, really, when you reflect on this. Last week, these same people, we heard, witnessed Jesus feeding 5,000 with 5 loaves and 2 fish. Jesus disappears off into the hills and down to the water, and then they go after him. The next day, according to John, we hear them say to him, "Can you show us a sign so that we should believe?" Hello? I mean, what happened yesterday? How quickly people forget. And we know that John is manipulating the circumstances to a certain degree, but he highlights the traits in personalities that exist within all of us at some stage in our life. And hopefully as we grow up, we start to lose those childish ways. But when life doesn't go well for us, we very quickly revert back to the strategies that we had in place when we were little children, when we started to learn how to lie and the effects of that, how to get what I want. We start that at about 3-4 years of age, research tells us. And then once we realise how that strategy works to get through difficult situations or to get out of trouble, by the time I'm just entering my teens, we have another encounter and we reinforce what we learnt first off. And then by the time we're at the end of our teens, research tells us that we have another encounter about how to resolve the big life issues in our life. And so we go back again to the strategies that we developed when we were little tiny kids. If I know that if I do this, I can get that, whatever it might be. It's very interesting because understanding that process is what we as trauma counsellors do to find out what is the source of a person's grief and trauma. Not an immediate trauma like Mac and your community have gone through, but the past exposure to whatever in our life. And so we waste a lot of time during the journey of our life. And the story of the Hebrews for 40 years is an example of the desire that God has not to give up on even the weakest of his people. And so he uses the image of physically giving them sustenance. Jesus takes that up in his mission, but he's not talking about physical sustenance. He's talking about spiritual sustenance. He's not talking about 40 days and 40 nights. He is talking about eternity. So when we look at the bread of life dialogues, especially from John's gospel, I encourage you to look not so much at the image, but what it leads us to. It is about a journey. That's why today's first reading starts off with the Hebrews leaving. Today we have Jesus journeying away and then the people journeying to him. For every journey we need sustenance. And some of it is physical, there is no doubt about that. We do, we need, genuinely need food and water to satisfy our bodily hunger and our bodily needs. But we are not, and Jesus is not talking about that. The reason why he doesn't need to talk about that is because if people pulled together and didn't waste time doing their own thing, but wasted time with God as a genuine loving community, then nobody would be hungry, nobody would be thirsty. But we see clearly in the world that people are more content to do their own thing and let hungry people starve and thirsty people die of thirst. That's what we're more content and more comfortable doing, it seems. So looking at the bread of life, there are two parts to it as I look. And the first part would be to do with what Jesus is teaching. And then the second part is actually about the Eucharist. Most people think, oh, it's another example of the Eucharist. Well, it is, but that is not the primary purpose of this conversation in today's gospel. The primary purpose is to get us to believe. And from belief comes our faith. What is going to sustain us during the journey of our life, the course of our life, is how strong that belief and how strong that faith is. It's very interesting. If you read the research that came out after the Second World War, when prisoners in Auschwitz were released, during their time in the prison camps, there were very few suicides, mainly because the people had hope. They had a hope that they would be released from this awful situation, either by liberation and freedom or by being released by death. When the Allies came in and actually released them, that's when the suicides started. It's interesting, isn't it? You would think, oh, they should be overwhelmed. They were overwhelmed, certainly because the hope had been removed, and after the crisis they could then contemplate what it is that they believed in. And what they believed in was shattered. They believed in the goodness of mankind. And now that they're free, they examined what are the essential tenets of their faith and what is it that is truly golden that I believe in about the goodness of mankind. And they had time then to dwell on the fact that I don't think there is much. And it led to that despair of suicide. And we're told again that after major crises, when people have time to reflect, so we're exposed to a trauma of whatever it is, and people come in with a power and a force and an energy and they do wonderful things, miraculous things. And when the dust has settled on the situation and we step back and we process what's actually happened, it's at that time that the knees go weak and crisis settles in. It's at that time that things like post-traumatic stress, PTSD you would notice, that's when that starts to settle in. Because we're processing all of the possibilities and how strong or weak, how right or wrong I was in handling that situation. And then I start to doubt my own ability. And that doubt in the goodness of human nature, doubt in the presence of God in all of this, doubt in myself, that becomes overwhelming. The only way that we can conquer that, I see, is by believing in the bread of life. in believing that Jesus is not going to desert us, never has and never will. Without that, what do people have? They are like the Hebrews whinging, show us a sign, give us something to eat. Without that, our life is empty, our journey is solo. And we're told that we're not flying solo on the journey, our spiritual journey. That's what we have to remind ourselves of. That's actually the main tenet of my belief. And then we have the second part, which is our Eucharist, of course, to give us that spiritual food and nourishment on the journey. The ancient Greeks had a term called ephodion. And ephodion was the gift that was given to a person before they went on a big journey. So it was a meal. That's what it was. And then in time, it became things like, oh, a spare pair of shoes or a coat or something like that to keep warm. They gave them little gifts, ephodion. And when the Latin world took over, the Roman world took over, the same word is translated into viaticus. And it means of or for the journey. And when the Christian world, after Christ became present as the bread of life, viaticus became viaticum, food for the journey. We get the word via, which means the way, the journey. And cum is where we get the word communion from. So viaticum is traditionally for us the food for the eternal journey. That's why it's called the last sacrament, as we prepare to leave this life to go to our eternal rest. The ancient Romans, they believed that they would have this special meal just before a person dies to give them the strength so that they could cross the river Styx. Two coins on the eyes and all that stuff. And then Christ, as the bread of life, became, he took over all of that symbology, and then it became the food for our life, viaticum. It's a beautiful concept in the Christian world. And the church's sacrament of the anointing of the sick and then giving viaticum, food for the eternal journey, is a truly, truly beautiful experience. It's probably got bad press at times because when a priest turns up in a hospital, people think someone's going to die. Well, that may be the case, but more often than not, the priest is there to pray with the sick on their journey of wherever they're at that time. It doesn't require a priest to pray for and be with people on the journey of life. It requires us to be present. It requires us to remove the doubt, and it requires us to truly have faith and believe God.